morning, everybody. For those of you who are joining us via video, we're a little late this morning and changed the venue because there was a traffic accident. It's a long story, but we'll spare you. Parsha Shlach. So the first piece is from a sefer. I mean, a lot of books in English, but they're not, I wouldn't refer to them as Sfarim, but this is a sefer in English. It's called What's Bothering Rashi. It's actually a sefer in 5 volumes on Chumash, which I recommend. This vort actually was my introduction to the sefer. It was written by Rabbi Avigdor Bonchik, who teaches here from time to time as well. And it's a classic understanding of Rashi, trying to get into the mind of Rashi, what causes Rashi to comment and not to comment in certain areas. So this is really, many years ago, a friend of mine in yeshiva told me this Dvar Torah, as a matter of fact. And when we came, a year ago, when we came to Eretz Yisrael, about a week afterwards, we went into a restaurant. There was a Sheva Brochas going on, and on the other side, and I heard someone speaking, and it was this friend of mine, and he was saying over this Dvar Torah. And that Shabbos was before Shabbos HaGodol, where I gave the Shabbos HaGodol to Rashi. There was a Shabbaton, and Rabbi Bonchik was here 2 days later. So it was one of those Eretz Yisrael stories. So here's the psukim, first of all. The spies are sent out. And they're told the following is their instruction. Ureitem et haaretz mahi. You should see the land, what it is. Ve'et ha'am hayoshev aleha, and the people who are living there. Now, you have to listen carefully because just to some of the nuances, but it'll come out. Hechazak hu harafe. Are they strong? Are they weak? Hame'at hu imrav. Are they few or are they many? Umaha aretz asher hu yoshev ba. And what's this land where they're living? Hatovahi imra. Is it good or is it bad? Uma ha'arim asher hu yoshev behaina. What about the cities? Ha b'machanim im b'mivtsarim. Are they open? Are they closed? Are they fortified? Or are they open? Uma ha'aretz hashmenahi. And what is this? Hashmenahi is the land plentiful? Imraza, or is it sparse? Hayesh ba'etz, are there trees? Im ayin, or are not? Etc., etc. Okay? Now, he picks up here, and he calls this, we'll just read his notes as we go along on this, an overlooked aberration in the verse leads to a psychological insight. These are his comments. So here we go back to one of the verses we quoted. Ureitem et ha'aretz mahi. Check out the land to see what it is. Ve'et ha'am hayoshev aleha, and the people who are dwelling on it. Hechazaku, are they strong? Is it strong? Harafe, or are they weak? Hame'atu im rav, are they few or are they many? So Rashi, if it's hard to read this, Hechazaku harafe. That's his lead words from the Pasuk. Siman masar lehem. Baruch Hashem gave them, Moshe gave them a sign. Im beprazim yoshvim, if they live in open cities, hachazakim heim, they're strong. Shesomchim al gvuratam, because they don't put fences up, they're relying on their might. V'im ba'arim b'tzorot heim yoshvim, but if they're living in closed-in cities, in fortified cities, chalashim heim, they're weak. So Rashi suggests an insight into the psychological self-image of the inhabitants of the land. He does so by referring to one indication, what Rashi calls a sign. He says, Siman Masalem, the type of cities they dwell in. From the type of city they saw, they were told that they could judge the strength of its inhabitants. Now, see the words that Rashi chose to make this comment on. Nothing is by accident. Hechazaku harafe. Are they strong or are they weak? Now look at he gives us an overview of the other comparisons. These are like either ors, right? There were either ors here. Hama'atu im rav. Now notice the word im is used in every pasuk except the one that we're focusing on. Are they ma'at im rav? Or are they many? Hatovahi, are they good? Is it good? Im, or is it rav? Hamachanim, are they open? Im b'mivtzarim, or are they fortified? Hashmeinahi, are they plentiful? Im raza, or are they sparse? Hayesh ba'etz, is there vegetation? Im ayin, or not? See the difference between our verse with the other one? Look on the right. Hachazak hu harafe, the strong, or are they weak? See on the right side. Hachazak hu harafe, are they strong or are they weak? See the difference? You spot a rarely noticed. You have the sheet?
On the right.
See on the bottom, see in the middle of the sheet, he says, see the following. And he lists on the left, Hama'atu imrav, Hatova imra, and on the right, it just says, Hachazak hu harafe. So all of these phrases are in the format of, is it good or is it bad? They're like either or. But our pasuk, you know, leaves out the crucial word, im, right? So here's what he answers. In Hebrew, we ordinarily read the verse this way. Hachazak hu harafe, is it strong or weak? But since the im is missing, you can also read, Hachazak hu harafe, the strong one is really the weak one, meaning that one that appears strong, the fortified city, is really the weak one. This is the sign that Moshe gave. In other words, you have to ask a question. He has in the pasuk, ha b'machanim im b'mivtzarim, are they dwelling in open cities or are they dwelling in fenced cities, walled cities? Why doesn't Rashi put his comment there? Why doesn't he say what he says here? You know, to check out the land. And he says if they're strong, chazak hu harafe. And he says if they're living in open cities, it means they're strong. If they're living in fortified cities, it means they're weak. They're not relying on their strength. He should say that when the pasuk says ha b'machanim im b'mivtzarim. But he doesn't comment there. He makes the comment on hachazak hu harafe. So this is a tremendous chiddush. So, since the word im is not there, you have to read it not the way we read every other phrase there. Is it, are they few or are they many? Are they good or are they bad? No. Hechazak hu harafe. The strong one is really weak. In other words, if they're fortified, it's not either or. This is the exception to the rule in this pasuk. Hechazak hu harafe. The seemingly, when they fortify themselves, that means they're weak. So they put up a fence to because they're scared, they're afraid. If they hachazak hu harafe, so that's the chiddush of Rashi, and that's why Rashi puts this comment in that phrase. He's drawing our attention to the uniqueness of the structure of the pasuk. Okay, on the other over the page, when the spies go out, they all start out being tzaddikim. They were really great men. And something happened, which we don't have time to go into today, but what I do want to focus on is two comments on this pasuk, Vayikra Moshe Lahoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. It was at this time, when the Meraglim were sent out, that God changed the name of Yehoshua. We know him as Yehoshua, Moshe's primary student. And in the pecking order of our Mesorah, of our tradition, Moshe, like we say at the beginning of Pirkei Avos, that Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from Har Sinai, and he gave it over to Yehoshua. Yehoshua was the next in line in the Mesorah in handing over the tradition. But his name was changed from Hoshea to Yehoshua. He put the letter Yud into his name, right? And Rashi says, V'yikra Moshe laHoshea, he palel alav, he davened for him, that he should be protected. Ka Yoshiacha me'atzat meragli. May God protect you from the Eitzah, from the bad advice of the other spies, because we know they're going to come back, except for Yehoshua and Kalev, the other 10 spies are going to come back with Lashon Hara on Eretz Yisrael, right? So Moshe prayed for Yehoshua, and the Yud from God's name, from the Yud Kevavke, was put into his name to give him that protection. That's what's going on here. So the question that both of these commentaries ask, this is from Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the first Rav, he was the Rav of Yerushalayim. And he asked the question, Madua lo hispalel Moshe gam al shar hamaraglim, shelo yikashlu ba'atz be'etzara. Why didn't Moshe pray for all the meraglim? Right? They all started out good, so why just daven for Yehoshua? right? Or, as Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asks on the left-hand column, we'll get to it in a minute, why didn't he pray for Kalev, right? Kalev did his own praying. He went to Hebron, he stopped off in Hebron, and prayed in Hebron that the Zchut Ha'avot, that the merit of our forefathers and our foremothers should give him the strength to do the right thing. So why didn't, so here's Ratzvi Pesach Frank's answer. Dafka mishum shera et avonot anavnuto shel Yehoshua, that Moshe recognized the incredible modesty and humility of Yehoshua. Yehoshua was really a student of Moshe, not only in Torah, but in character, in midot, in midos. So we know that Moshe was anav mikol adam, so Yehoshua had that trait as well. He had that incredible humility. So dafka, necessarily because of Yehoshua's humility, lechein chashash, Moshe was suspected, shema yaskim la'atzat ha-meraglim. So because he was so humble, he'll agree to the etza of the meraglim. We shouldn't go into Eretz Yisrael. It's a bad place. It's not a place for Jews. We shouldn't go there. Why? V'zot mikivan, since he knew, shahayta lo negia ksheira, he had a, what you call a negia ksheira. How do you translate negia? A personal motivation. What?
Touch.
Touch? No, well, that's, the, yeah, it's also to touch, to be nogeya. But negia means, if I have negias, like, I can't translate it, but you know, in Hilchot Edut, in giving testimony, a relative cannot testify in court for another relative. Why? They have negia. They have negias.
Connection.
They have connection. So they're going to be posseladus. You know, father can't give edus on a son. His son's the best guy in the world, right? So Yehoshua, he said, had a negia ksheira. He had a kosher connection. Why he would not tell the truth? Because of his humility. I'll just put it in my words. He knew that he was going to take over the leadership of, he would have to take over the leadership of Klal Yisrael once they came into Eretz Yisrael. His humility was such that he didn't want to do that. He felt he wasn't fit to be the leader. So perhaps he would just stay silent when the Meraglim gave their etzed not to go into Eretz Yisrael. For his own humility, right? So he says, "Shiada et hanavua shel Moshe meit v'Yoshua machnis." He knew the prophecy that Moshe is going to die, and Yeshua is going to take Bnei Israel into Eretz Yisrael. Umitzad enough anaf nuto, and because of his anivus, chashash Moshe. So Moshe was afraid. Pen Yehoshua yiratzeh shel lo yikansu la'aretz, that Yeshua would vote for not going into Eretz Yisrael. That he wouldn't have to wear the crown of Hanaga, that he wouldn't have to take on the leadership, which he felt he was not fit for. So dafka, Moshe prayed for Yehoshua, that Yehoshua should have the strength. But really, Moshe saw that, you know, Yehoshua had good reason. Although he had no business doing that, but he would do it for the right reason. He would make the wrong choice. So therefore, he prayed dafke for Yehoshua. Now negias are a very funny thing. You know, I'll tell you a story. There was a great rabbi. Those of you who study Gemara, you've heard of the Ketzos HaChoshen. Ketzos HaChoshen. You cannot learn Choshen Mishpat without the Ketzos HaChoshen. Great authority. And there was once a Din Torah, somebody took the Ksos to Din Torah, he wanted to take him to court over some dispute in real estate or something, whatever it was. And nobody wanted to take the case. Who's going to sit in a Bezdin when one of the litigants is this famous Ksos against some regular businessman, right? So they finally found a young Rav, a brilliant young Rav, way out of in the Provence, you know, in a small town who was just starting. And he had a reputation as an up-and-coming Talmud Chacham. And he took the case. He didn't know who the Ketzos was. He didn't know him. So he took the case, and he paskened against the Ketzos. He paskened in favor of the other guy. And the Ketzos said to him afterwards, which you're allowed to do, it's Halachim Shulchan Aruch, I accept the Psak, but I'd like to know your reasoning. You know, I would like to know your reasoning. He said, okay, just a minute. He went into his library, went into his Otzer Thorny Bryce, says, there was a new sefer, he says, it's been printed recently, the Ketzos HaChoshen, and he showed him in the Ketzos, the halacha was exactly the way he paskened, and it was the Ketzos who wrote it. But that's what negiyas are. When a person has negiyas, that's now you see how hard it is to translate that word.
It can't be impartial.
Can't be impartial. So that's a classic story. So here, Moshe was afraid that Yoshua would not be impartial. He wouldn't want the leader. Now listen, this is beautiful. This is beautiful. Number three, this is Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky's answer to this question. Right? Vayikra Moshe leHoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. Pirush, you're going to like this, especially the ladies. Nitpalel alav ka Yoshia chamiyatzat maragim. He davened that God should save you from the advice of the other spies. Kvar heiru hamefarshim. The commentaries have already said, Madua have asked, Madua lo hitpalel Moshe gam al Kalev. Why didn't he daven for Kalev also? Kalev also was a good guy. Shelo yechteh miyatzat maragim. He wouldn't fall into the trap of the other Meraglim and speak out against Eretz Yisrael. Who was Kalev married to? Miriam. Anybody know?
Miriam.
V'efshar shesavar Moshe. Moshe understood. Shekalev, shehaya nasui le'ishet tzadeket kemo Miriam hanavia. Kalev, who was married to Miriam, who was prophetess, who was a righteous person, such a special wife, betach lo yitfas ba'atzat Meraglim, ve'enu zakuk lebracha. He had a wife like Miriam. He didn't need a special prayer. He obviously was going to do the right thing because he was guided by his wife. Someone who has a wife like Miriam doesn't need my tefillah to make sure that he'll do the right thing. His wife has trained him well, okay? Because in the end, we really know who's in charge, okay? That's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Okay, so now this last piece here is also a kind of a psychological insight. At the end of the Parsha, you have the famous story of the Mikoshesh Eitzim, this fellow who gathered sticks on Shabbos. He was actually Mechal Shabbos, and he was put in jail for being Mechal Shabbos. And here's the Medrash that talks about, here's the Pasuk, Vayu b'nei Yisrael b'midbar, the Jews were in the desert, Vayimtzu Yish Mikoshesh Eitzim b'yom HaShabbat, and they caught a guy, right, collecting firewood on Shabbos. One time, a person is Mechal Shabbos in the desert, right? Mekoshesh l'shem shamayim nitkaveh, the Medrash says. The Mekoshesh did this for the sake of heaven. He purposefully transgressed Shabbos. He was Mechal Shabbos for the sake of heaven. Shehayu amrim Yisrael, because the Jewish people would say, kivan shenigzar aleihem, since it was decreed against them, Shaloli Kanes Laharitz Mimaisa Meragli, it was decreed that that generation could not enter the land of Israel because of the spies. Shuv Ein Mechuyavim B'Mitzvot. So you know what? Really, if we can't go into Eretz Israel, we're not obligated to do mitzvahs. Good, we can be Mechal Shabbos, right? Because really, Tariq mitzvahs were given for Eretz Israel. There's a whole lengthy Ramban here on this topic. Not that you can't do mitzvahs outside, but B'nai Yisrael the Mekoshesh felt that B'nai Yisrael would feel that we can't go into Eretz Yisrael, which is where we're supposed to live out Torah, so good, we can be Mechal Shabbos, we don't have to keep mitzvahs. Amad V'chil Shabbos, he dafka was Mechal Shabbos, kedei shiyahareg v'yirachem, so he would be punished, and people would see that you cannot break Shabbos. So this is a comment in our oral tradition, it's a Tosfos in Baba Basra, in the name of a Medrash. Now, the question that this is Rabbi Yeshaya Karlinsky, past generation, and he asks a question here, Minayin yadu chazal shemekoshesh l'shem shemayim nitkaveh. How do they know that he meant it l'shem shemayim? Maybe he was a Mechal Shabbos. Maybe he was a Mechal Shabbos. V'lo haya bal avera pashut. Maybe that was it. Maybe he was a bal avera. Not l'shem shemayim. Where did they get this idea that he was? The Medrash just says it. The Medrash doesn't tell us how. So he has a fascinating psychological insight. And he writes here, Bedrush Nifla Toen Hagon Rabbi Yishai Karlinsky, who was the Av Bezdin of a city in two cities in Lithuania, Tochovitz, it's one of the cities, Shereyatam Hi Mi Pashtut HaKtuvim, that the proof is from a simple reading of the verses, which we'll see. And he says, Va'al Adnei HaPsicholagia HaAmiti. He says this is a pure reading, a simple reading of the text, and classic psychology. Okay? So let's see what he says. He's going to tell us that there are three reasons why a person would be Mechal Shabbos, why a person would do an Aveira. There are three reasons why a person would do an Aveira. Ki hinei, humatim, he says. Adam Aveira Aveira me'achat migimul sibot. A person does an Aveira for one of three reasons. Number one, l'te'avon, right? He loves that cheeseburger. He just enjoys it, right? Mitoch ratzon limalot ta'avot nafsho. He wants to fill his taivas. He's got a tremendous taiva for this thing, a passion for this thing. Uchukatav habehemiyot, his animal instinct, so he can't control himself, right? That's one reason why a person doesn't obey. Second reason, la'achis. La'achis means to be spiteful, in spite, despite the Ribbono Shel Olam, despite the rabbi, despite the whatever. Zeh ha'mevakesh laharot et omitz nafsho. He wants to show his independence, right? Va'amidato b'rishut atzmo. I'm my own person. I'm an independent guy. I don't have to listen to everything you tell me, right? That's what we call la'achis. V'chi einenu mevatel et ritzono mipnei ratzon acherim. I don't give in to anybody. Ve'eno mitchashei b'data. I don't, you know, I hear what you say, but I say better. Third reason why a person doesn't have error is lishma. It's for the sake of heaven. Hu hayodeya, he knows sheha'aveira megunahi. He knows that the aveira is wrong. Ve'ein ritzono la'asotan, he really doesn't want to do it. Ela shemot sihu bo tachlit chashuva mot, but he sees in doing this aveira lishma, he sees a purpose. Sheschara gavoa yoter mehefsin aveira. Whatever the situational ethic is, that my doing this aveira is more important than my not doing it, than my doing the mitzvah. Like in the case that Chazal are suggesting with the Mekoshe Sheitzin. That's an Avera Lishma. To keep people, I'm Michal having Michal Shabbat Achad Kadei Sheishmur Shabbatot Arbe. That's what the Gemara says. Be Michal Shabbos once in order that Shabbos should be kept many, many Shabbos into the future. That's Lishma. So number one, you have L'Te'avon. My taivas, my passion, I can't control, I want that. Lahachis, in spite, to show my independence. And lishma, for the sake of heaven. Now, how do we determine what the Mekoshesh did? Me'ata. Now, ka'asher nireh adam over avera. When you see a person transgress a sin, lo aleinu, God forbid, v'nirtza livchon, and you wanna check it out. U'ladat me'eza siba avarat avera. So, you want to assess, what did he do? Why did he do this? I see this guy, it's Michal Shabbos. Why did he do that? Yeah, Lena Lipurin. So you have to think. Im ba'avera yesh taiva. If the avera, there's a taiva, right? Like, let's say, a cheeseburger, right? Something like that. You know, he was a Baal Tshuva, and he just couldn't, you know, or smoking on Shabbos. You know, he couldn't control himself. U'memeila bo et chukotav habahamiyot. And his animal instinct got the better of him. Nuchal lomar, you could say sha'aveira ila te'avon. Say clearly, if that aveira is the kind of aveira, right? Miteva hadvorim, you know. Can't say, let's say shatnez. You know, guy's gonna dafka wear shatnez. He's gonna wear wool and linen. What is there? That's not a thing you have a taiva for, right? To wear shatnez, I can't do without wearing shatnez. Obviously, then he's not doing it. He's not doing ila te'avon. But to eat that food or to smoke that cigarette on Shabbos, we're using that example, that's the te'avon. You assess what kind of an aveira it is. Right here? So, miteva dvarim. Hachote misugze, aveira misugze, yivchare ta'avera sheyesh bo taiva yoter gedolah. So if a person is going to do something with te'avon, he's going to pick an aveira that, you know, something that really is going to satisfy, quench his passion, his desire, his physical, materialistic desire. So that's what you assess. Oh, that must be, he did it. So I'm not, you know, he did it, he couldn't control himself. He did it l'te'avon, okay? Lumatzot, on the other side of the coin, imu oivir lahachis, if he's doing an avera in spite, yivchar et ha'avera, he's going to choose an avera, she'ein bo hanat ha'guf klal, that doesn't necessarily give him physical pleasure, right, bodily pleasure, he's going to take something that's going to be most offensive to people, right? He's going to get in the car and turn on the car in front of the shul and drive a half a block, right? Just drive in front of the shul when people are coming out of shul at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, depending on where you daven and how long the rabbi speaks. He's going to wait outside. He's going to turn on the car as everybody's coming out, and he's going to drive slowly from one block to the next, right? So he's going to pick an aveira that's going to most most infuriate people, but not necessarily an avera that's going to satisfy his physical desires, right? So you see the psychological focus of the avera. Then third thing is v'im nira echad over avera she'ein bo hanaklo. But if you then see somebody who's going to transgress an avera that there is absolutely no pleasure principle involved whatsoever. V'gam nireit kala b'nei b'nei adam, and it seems like a simple thing in the eyes of people. V'oseh b'zadon, and he does it purposefully. Navin ki avera zuhi avera lishma. Right? In other words, v'ata, let's take a look. Be'ezrat evchana mishuleshet zu. Because our tripartite lesson in psychology, let's now look at the avera of the mekoshesh etzim, collecting firewood on Shabbos in the desert. Nuchal livchon, we can now, using this psychological barometer, we can now determine what kind of an avera he performed. Nuchal livchon heitev as parshas hamekoshesh, what he did. Hare bamidbar lo ayu tzrichim klal etzim. In the desert, they didn't need wood. They didn't need wood for fire. What did they need it for? For food? Ki mezonam haya haman. They had man. They had the magic man. Shelo yarad letanor. Didn't have to go into the oven. Velo nitbashel bikdeira. Didn't have to cook. Imagine, every day, you didn't have to cook. You just, you know, what do you want for supper? Right? You want steak for supper? You want chicken for supper? You want schnitzel? You want milchiks, you want fleishiks, you take out the man from the closet, you give them the man to eat, everybody eats the man, and it tastes whatever you want it to taste like. So, he didn't have to make a fire, right? Ela kimot shehu hayu motziim bo kol ta'amim shebo olam. The raw man tasted like anything in the world, anything you wanted it to taste like. Vizel lanu lo'od. So this is a sign for us. So clearly this was not, we can cancel out the first one. It wasn't a te'avon. It wasn't for passion, right? It wasn't for eating, for food, to satisfy his animal inclination to eat something really good. Because he can eat it. He can get he wants a steak on a barbecue. He got the wood. He doesn't need it. All he has to do is eat the man. He's eating a steak, right? So it's not te'avon. Shahari lo hayalo behem tzorach klo. No, didn't need the wood. Avera zu hayta o lahachis. So it's either lahachis, it's either for spite, or we're now limiting it, or it's really l'shem shemayim. So let's see. V'shuv niponin. Let's bring our psychological test again. Nistaver ma'od, it would appear, sheha over lahachis, when someone does an aver in spite, borer lo et aver, is going to choose a sin, shenireit yoter gdola, which appears to be an awful, insulting act. Va'anu yadanu, but we know kihotsa carrying, he was carrying wood. That's what he was doing. Malechet geruahi, he was seen carrying wood, dalet amos in the Rishus HaRabim. You're not allowed to carry on Shabbos, right? That's why we have an Eruv. You have an Eruv, so you can carry. Without an Eruv, it is forbidden to carry arba amos, about 6 feet. You're not allowed to carry something 6 feet. So he was carrying this wood, right? Now, carrying is called malacha geruah, right? It's a term that the Tosfos used, one of the commentaries in the Gemara. It's considered an insignificant act of avera. When you line it up with all of the other 39 malachas of Shabbos, carrying is really, you know, a minor kind of a thing. Why it is the lead malacha in the Gemara and Shabbos is a whole other question. There are many answers to that. You open up the Masechta of Shabbos, you open up our oral tradition, the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Gemara and Shabbos, and there are pages and pages about carrying on Shabbos. So one of the answers to that, by the way, is the Pnei Yeshua says, the Maral says, because it's unique to Shabbos. And the Gemara will always start off with something that is unique to the topic at hand. Right? The other things on Shabbos, you can find comparable lessons in other areas of Torah. But carrying is something that's unique to the mitzvah of Shabbos. In any event, carrying is a malacha geruah. It's not that, as you would say, it's a lesser malacha kind of thing, right? The Kasva Tosfos, and he quotes the Tosfos, she ha'averas ha'avaras arba amot b'rishut ha'rabim gam kein malacha geruahi. Carrying something 4 steps in the rishus ha'rabim is a minor kind of, when you in them overall, it's an issur d'oraisa. You're going to be punished like any other Torah prohibition. But in terms of the action itself, he says it's a minor kind of an action. V'hamekoshesh l'dat Shmuel, according to one of the opinions in the Gemara, ma'avir arba amos b'rishus ha'rabim. That's what he did. That's what he was caught doing. They blow the whistle on him because he was carrying 4 amos. V'im ken lo haytazu aver l'chachiz. He obviously wasn't doing this to create attention. He wasn't doing something awful. He wasn't, you know, we said before, like lighting a fire. He wasn't taking the wood and actually lighting a fire in front of people, which would have been such an offensive act. He was carrying 4 amas. He carried a piece of wood. So by taking this psychological test, you see, it wasn't a tavon. He didn't need the food to start a fire because he had the food. It wasn't lahachis because it was, he chose a minor kind of a malacha. So by process of elimination, he was doing what? He was doing it lishma. Now just flip the page here. There's the final paragraph. Laor zot, now we can conclude. Yumtak lanu ma'od. Makes a lot of sense. Masha omrot benot slavchad lemoshe. What the daughters of Slavcha, by the way, who was the Mekosha Jetzi? Slavcha, right? So that his daughters, who eventually created a brought Moshe to bring out the laws of inheritance to women. So Avinu made Bamidbar, they said. Our father died Bamidbar in the desert. Why did they have to say that? Avinu made Bamidbar. Behadgashatam Shahaya Zebe Midbar. They emphasized that it was in the desert. Why? Gilul Avien Shaavien Avar Averu Lishma. They were implying that their father did an Avera for the sake of heaven. Shahare Hayah Davar Bamidbar, it was in the desert. Shabo Lohayut Srichim Eitzim Klal. They didn't need wood. V'im Kain Lohayetazu Averu Teavon, it wasn't for passion. V'aflo Lahachis, and not to incite. Shahare Hotza Malacha Geruahi. It was one of those lesser things that actions. Ubal Korchenu, perforce. Hayetazu Averu Lishma. It was an Avera for the sake of heaven. Ubekachim Litzu Alav Latova Lifnei Moshe. And that's how we get this beautiful idea, psychological idea, just from the psukim, right?
What do you mean an Avera for the sake of Moshe?
Pardon me?
For the sake of heaven. What do you mean an Avera for the sake of heaven?
To save people. Because
to save people, right.
Save people from being Michal Shabbos in the future. Because remember what we started out with. The fear was, we're not going into Eretz Yisrael, where mitzvahs are going to be observed. So since we're not going to Eretz Yisrael, maybe we don't have to keep Shabbos. So the Mekoshesh was afraid people were going to say that. So he dafka was Mechal Shabbos, so he would be punished for not keeping Shabbos, and people would know the importance of Shabbos. I just want to end with a story which I'm just reminded of. It was a famous story in Radin. It was the city of the Chofetz Chaim. Oh, the city, it was a village, a small village, where the great Chofetz Chaim had his yeshiva. And there was, in Radin, one Jew who was Mechal Shabbos. It reminded me of this as I was talking. Now, the Mechal Shabbos in Radin, it means they kept the store open late, a little late Friday night, and that was it. It was closed. But he was Mechal Shabbos. So they told the Chofetz Chaim, so Chofetz Chaim called him in. And he spoke to him for a few minutes. And after that, for the rest of his life, the fellow was Shomer Shabbos, right? So I heard a story from a colleague of mine, a rabbi, who was telling this story over maybe 40, 45 years ago in Miami Beach, Florida. 45 years ago. In the library. If you know Miami Beach, there's a library in South Beach. I don't know if it's still there. It's a public library in South Beach. And you can use it for, you know, communal events, so they would have shiurim there. In the winter, people came on vacation, so rabbanim who were there would give shiurim in the library. So he gave a shiur and he told the story over. After the shiur, a guy came over to him, an old man came over to him, and he said to him, Ani hagever, ani haish, ich bin der yid, I am that Jew who was Michal Shabbos in Radin. So he asked him, tell me, what did the Chofetz Chaim say? That you stopped being Michal Shabbos. He said, he took my hand, he says, you know, the Chofetz Chaim was about 4 feet something tall, he was very short. And he took my hands in his hands, and all he said was, Shabbos. Shabbos. He just kept repeating the word Shabbos, and he was crying. And the tears were rolling down his cheeks, and they fell on my hand. I could still, to this day, he says, Ada Yom Hazeh, I can feel the burning of the tears on my hands. That's all he said to me. And I became a Shomer Shabbos from that mindset. It's a beautiful story of the Hovetz Chaim. Okay, people, thank you for your patience today.
Thank you.